Hi, I am Amanda Kassar, and welcome to the Financial Secrets Revealed podcast, where I have collected the wisdom from some amazing people around the world to understand better their money story. I have financial advisors, multi-million dollar corporate executives, and those surviving on Centrelink, even running global charities. I hope you enjoy listening to the episodes as I speak with these incredible people about their stories. Hi, it's Amanda Kassar from Wealth Planning, and I am with the fabulous Jenny Brown from JBS Strategists, based in lockdown Melbourne at the moment. And we're here to talk a little bit about Financial Secrets Revealed, because Jenny did reveal some fabulous secrets to me in the book when I was lucky enough to write that and interview her. So how are you going in lockdown, Jenny?
Oh, look, it's just
tough.
That's about it. It's sort of like Groundhog Day. It's just like every day is the same. It's just slightly different. But
so look, we're getting there. Walking the dogs, and that's about it.
Yeah, I look very, very fortunate to live in glorious Mount Martha. So since I was interviewed and in the book, we've actually moved down to the Mornington Peninsula permanently. So I was, if I'd had the foresight, timing couldn't have been better. So 3.5 years ago, moved down here, so I've got magnificent views, and yeah, at least I'm not looking at full walls.
Yeah, and 2 new puppies to add to the collection of keeping you very busy getting them walked.
2 new puppies who are now, 1 year old, wow. Would you believe?
Yep, I would, because I was there when you got them a year ago, so when I was still allowed to visit back in the day. So hopefully by the time this goes live, you will be out of lockdown and able to at least get coffee and go to a restaurant and live life again, which would be fabulous.
So that would be good.
It was Boxing Day last year that I went to Melbourne, so, and haven't been since, so I need my fix.
We'd love to have you back down again, but you probably have to be able to get back up.
Yeah. Can I quarantine in my own house? That's the question. Mm. Now, I loved one of the quotes that happened right at the start of the book. You said, just start. There's never going to be a perfect time, but get started. So to get started between us, you've been an advisor for many years. Can you tell me, please, how you ended up falling into financial planning?
And that's probably about it. I did fall into financial planning. So back in the recession we had to have of Paul Keating's, would you believe, and now we're in the middle of another recession, I was made redundant from advertising, and so I couldn't get a job because none of the advertising agencies were putting anyone on, and everyone was saying, well, no, we're actually going to cut back. So I answered an ad, and the ad was, think and grow rich. If you want to earn in excess of X, call this person. And I'd read Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, and I thought, yeah, I can do that. So I answered that, and it was to work in the insurance industry. So looking after clients for life insurance, income protection, trauma insurance. So I basically fell into it through that. And then from there, then started, doing study and networking and found out more about financial planning, and then moved to then be licensed through a fabulous group of people who taught me really the fundamentals and foundations around financial planning and tax and structures and all that sort of stuff.
So I think I remember about 25 years ago I was working as a secretary for a life insurance one day, and it seemed almost overnight we became personal assistants to financial planners, and I'm not quite sure how it happened, but we started that progression that we're still on the pathway now from industry to profession, and we're so much closer now with what's the changes in Australia. So it's certainly been a long journey.
Absolutely.
Now, yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about your history? My purpose when I first wrote the book was to find out what influence, I suppose, that people's families, especially their parents, had on them when it came to money, if there were actual stories that you were told by your parents, or were there just those lessons that you picked up around the trap? So what's a little bit about your history and how money, what it meant to you from very little?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we were growing up, I've got a brother, and we grew up on an orchard which is now developed and house on house on house. But back then it was 3.5 acres. Dad had the view that he wanted to live in sort of a rural-ish sort of area. And one of his favourite sayings was, money doesn't grow on apple trees. Now, we happened to be living on an apple and pear orchard, so it was very apt. And I think the history from there really came about. He grew up in Newport in the Depression. He fought in World War II. He basically joined up as soon as he could. And when he came out of the war, he looked after his mother. His father, unfortunately, passed away. He looked after his mother and his sisters. And so it was very hard work for him at the time. And really, you had to look after, you had to count every penny. And so that was really instilled in us as kids in, you know, you just can't expect to just be given money. You had to really earn it. And delayed gratification was a big teaching of his.
So if you wanted the new bike, you couldn't just race out and get one, I'm guessing.
Correct, no. So the idea was we did chores around the house because we lived, you know, a fair distance away from anywhere else. So whether it was washing the windows, emptying the dishwasher, preparing the meals, washing the car, whatever it happened to be, and we earned points as such. And those points then converted to dollars. And if we wanted a new bike, then we had to save for at least 50% of that. And the other 50% was negotiated, generally speaking, as a birthday or Christmas present, depending on what time of the year. So we had to work for it and earn it. And as a result, I think I'm one of these hoarder people that doesn't throw away anything because I really value what we've got.
That's a really interesting point you make between delayed gratification and valuing things. Do you think the society we're in today still fundamentally has that, or in a massive change and living in a world of instant gratification now?
I think we're in an instant world of gratification. Having said that, I think that COVID has reset a lot of people, and not being able to spend time with our family and our friends and get out and in, you know, I guess enjoy life. In Victoria, we can't go, or Melbourne, we can't go more than 5Ks from where you live. I think as a result, then we value the simpler things in life, and we've learned to value because they've been taken away. So I think it's interesting. A lot of people are getting back to that. The way that I was when I grew up, you know, the gardening and the seeking the pleasures out of those sort of simple things that we have taken for granted for so many years.
Yeah, it seems a very generational thing that our parents or grandparents who were either war babies or post-war babies, that they lived in this world of massive scarcity where things absolutely had to last. You know, they'd mend their nylons or the shoes or whatever they had to be repaired. It wasn't just, I'll duck down to Kmart and get my 10-pack of sockies or undies or T-shirts or whatever it may be. That wasn't an option. And I was even talking to my mother recently about how they used to have, I think you'd call it a lard jar in the fridge where you'd recycle all the oil. And you walk into a supermarket now and there's 15, 20 different types of oils on sale. Do you want your coconut? Do you olive oil? We just didn't have the variety or the means back then. So it's very slowly, I think, changed. But like you said, it's almost lovely to see that return to the simple things mentality that is shaping up now. So one of the things I like to ask in the book was, what was the best financial tip that you were ever given growing up, or the one that stood out the most to you over the years?
Yeah, I think, look, there's probably two. One is, you know, I was told through very early on in my financial planning career is you need to live where your clients live. And what was meant by that was, if you want to attract certain type of clients, then you need to be able to understand how they live and where they live and what their lifestyle and things like that was, and to show that you were on the same sort of level as them. And I'm not talking about keeping up with the Joneses and stuff like that, but just, you know, understanding what they...
Is that like attracts like almost? Yeah. Or like working with people who you're like and,
yes,
and interested in?
Yes. Yeah, and that was really where it came from. So I think that was the first, well, that was part, very early on in financial planning. And the other thing is to value money, and that came from my father, is to make sure that you do value what you're earning from that side of things.
you know, actually when we put this together, you just made the decision and you'd sold Glen Iris and I think Sorrento, and you were looking to move to Mount Martha. So you'd made that lifestyle decision then. So it's all come true in the interview.
It has come true. It's interesting.
Yeah, wonderful. Now, as an advisor, an award-winning financial advisor with your own business, obviously people come to you professionally and pay for your advice. So do you have a top tip that you like to share with your clients?
Well, I guess one of the things that we always talk to clients about is clients need a money coach or a financial advisor, just like elite athletes need, you know, their own coaches. So to make sure that you've got somebody there in your corner to help you with various strategies and keep you accountable, I think is really, really important. And the other thing is to make sure that you're invested wisely, and diversification is key. So, you know, one of our top tips is good quality property and blue chip shares are really good winners. So yes, you can pick a mid-cap stock that flies one day, but it can crash the next. So it's really important to make sure that you've got a good, well-rounded, diversified portfolio.
Yeah, I suppose that's especially so in times at the moment where we have such volatility and uncertainty. I mean, we've got local elections coming up, the American elections coming up. So it's, yeah, very, very good advice, especially for the long-term investor. Mm, so
absolutely.
Now, something that a lot of advisors or money coaches recommend is having a budget. And I know, look, most people's eyes glaze over or roll back in the head when you say the dreaded budget word. So do you run one first personally, I suppose, for you and your partner? And do you have one for your business as well? And if you do, what's the value in it?
Yes and yes. So for business, we use Xero. It's really easy software. Everything feeds in. So I'm so used to Xero. I've been using it now for well over 20 years.
I didn't realise Xero was that old now. Gosh.
Yes. So almost when GST came in, that's when we went to Xero. And because I understand it and use it every day, then I set one up for me personally, or for us personally. And again, bank feeds feed in and I categorise, so I know exactly how much we spend on groceries, on the dogs, on the household maintenance, on, I can tell you what the rates are, the water, the electricity, all of that sort of stuff, you know, what we spend on clothes, health. And by doing that and knowing that, you can see where your money's going and you can see how much you're saving and how much things are costing. So it becomes really easy to then do a review to say, well, why are we spending this amount on, I don't know, pick electricity or going out or whatever it happens to be, and do we need to review it? So from a personal point of view, absolutely. And so when clients say to me, oh, you know, I hate that word budget, it's like, yeah, I know, but if you set it up, it really does make a lot of sense longer term. And then for a business, yes, we use Xero, but I also run cash flow forecasts on a spreadsheet. I prefer to do it on a spreadsheet because I then group the expenses. So we do forecasts for the next 12 months on what we anticipate is going to come in every month and what expenses are going to go out. And that's based on historical 12 months ago, what those expenses are, and then what's changed. So we review that as a business every month and make sure that we're on track, that our EBIT's tracking the right way, that our debt levels are going down, and that our cash in the bank's going up.
Excellent. Which I suppose leads into business planning and a formal business plan. Again, you know, they can go from one page to hundreds of pages and either be a living, breathing document or something that sits on the shelf and might get pulled out now and then. Do you do business planning and do you revisit it? How does that work for you?
Yes. So, yes, we do business planning. So we generally do an offsite. I've got a business partner. We generally do an offsite on at least an annual basis. So we spend a day just going through everything, looking at the values, the principles of the business, so what we stand for and what our trademark behaviours are. From there, we then look at what we need to get. And as I said, I do cash flow forecasts and planning from a numbers point of view on a monthly basis, but we also model that out over the next sort of 12 months, 3 years. So from that side of things, we do that. We have a business coach because I'm a big believer in coaches, just like, you know, we're coaches for our clients. We as a business need a business coach. So we've got one. we catch up at least on a monthly basis. During COVID, it's been a little bit more frequently because we've done training with the team. And in that, we make sure that we work on the various areas within the business that we need to work on. And we have quarterly board meetings. So those quarterly board meetings are reviewing the income we've earned from clients, where new clients have come from, the sources. We look at our profitability. We look at any clients that may have left us during that period and why that would be. So, yeah, so it's really, we do drill down into
quite
those
details. So for people who've never, I suppose, looked at using an advisor before, and I know the stats for both Australia and the UK are under 20% of the population who can actually do seek advice, why would you encourage people to actually chat with an advisor? I know you have touched on this with the elite coaches, but is there any other, I suppose, standout reasons why people would want to see an advisor? Because, I mean, the, I suppose, conception is that it costs money to do it. So people need to invest probably an amount to do it. So why would they do that? What benefits would they get from seeing a professional advisor?
Well, I think that, you know, we don't know what we don't know. And an advisor will keep you on track. Generally speaking, will keep you on track. It will help make sure that you draw out what your goals are, what you want to get out of life and what's important to you in life, and then help you put a plan in place. Now, you might only need to engage that advisor for a short period of time, or you might want to work with them longer term. Depends on how hands-on you want to be. So a lot of our clients, they want to know what's going on, but they're quite happy then to outsource the rest of the investment decisions and that sort of stuff to us as specialists. Whereas, you know, some clients, they want to do all their own trading and things like that. And longer term, they're generally not the right clients for us to work with longer term, but we can always sit down and touch on their plan to make sure that they are on track to achieve their goals. And I think that's the key, is that, you know, often the things change and strategies change. And so if, you know, you want to make sure that you're maximising that to get ahead and achieve those goals.
I think what you're saying is so true across so many different areas. You know, if people want to lose weight, they know they need to eat less and exercise more. It's not rocket science. Yet they'll join a gym or get a personal trainer or get a workout buddy. It's that accountability, I think, that motivates us to get there and keep going. I mean, we know what to do, and there's so much information available now that may or may not be true.
Yeah.
But having that person, that professional who can push you that little bit harder or take you to places you probably wouldn't have gone before with the education and the knowledge that you're gaining, that beautiful relationship where you are holding them accountable. Now, you did touch on something that's a little bit newer, I suppose, in financial advice, where people would come and have these long-term relationships. I'm personally finding in my own business there's more a rise of what I'd call ad hoc sort of advice, where people do come and just want a one-off thing. Do you think that will continue? And that's, I suppose, since the rise of COVID, there's more going, right, I just need this one-off checkup. Do you think that's going to continue?
I think it will. A challenge for us as advisors is to make sure that we price our services appropriately so that we make money and it's the right price for the clients. I think that is a challenge, but I think more and more people, and I think probably not necessarily your pre and post retirees, your younger, you know, 30s and 40s, they want to get that plan. They want to understand what they need to do, and then they'll track it themselves. So they're quite happy to work with an advisor as a one-off, or, you know, maybe a series of meetings, and then run their own plan, you know, for the next however many years until something else changes.
Yeah, I've found that too, where then, you know, the next big thing is, oh, we want to save for a house or we want the baby or whatever, and, you know, there'll be a 4 or 5 year where they'll be going, right, I want to check in at this stage rather than see you every year. So definitely finding that, like, rise of ad hoc advice to be new and different, and, yeah, something is, like you said, we need to price right and get right for the clients who need that. So I think it's a great new area that, you know, we're all sort of expanding into. Any other top tips or anything that comes to mind for financially, I suppose, betterment of people who are listening in and want to know what are these secrets to advice and finances that they haven't learnt yet or can pick other people's brains to take home?
Look, I think we've covered most of them. I guess one of the, you know, it's get the right advice, partner with the right people, make sure that you're either hold yourself accountable or get the right coach to hold you and keep you accountable. And, you know, no plan is ever put in concrete. Things change. But making sure that you can see what's going on down the track and that you are adaptable enough to be able to change and move with the times.
Yeah, perfect. And, you know, every year we're not going to be able to sit there and go, look, you made 10% in your portfolio this year. You know, Mark, look, if we're in control of markets, we wouldn't be sitting here chatting, would we? So, yeah, I think having that coach to go, look, there will be good years, bad years, but we're on track. This is the long-term goal and we're still doing that. Because it can be tough times when you go, what's happened in the last 12 months is the wheels fall off. And to just go, look, we're staying the course. We know it'll get better. You know, if anything, I suppose when the wheels do come off, it's that great time for the advisor to say, throw in more while markets are down and not be so frightened and switching where, you know, we've have seen clients in the past go, oh, I'm so frightened. I'm changing it all to cash, which is the worst thing. And they find out in hindsight. So, yeah, I think having that coach to keep you accountable is a really brilliant idea. So,
absolutely. And make sure that you save.
Yes.
Keep spending down.
Yeah, live within your means. Best advice ever given by anybody, that one, isn't it?
So. Exactly.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us, Jenny, today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity. Great to chat.
And that was another episode of Financial Secrets Revealed. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you got some nuggets of wisdom out of that guest and enjoyed listening to their story. If you'd like to know more, please reach out to me. My contact details are in the show notes, or hunt down your favourite bookstore to find Financial Secrets Revealed and learn more for yourself. I look forward to hearing from you.